Blog Talk Radio.
I'm terribly sorry, sir, but your credit card
your
has been declined.
Your unemployment benefits ran out two weeks
what
ago.
What do you mean I'm overdrawn?
2 weeks ago.
Checks left. 2 weeks ago.
Too much month left over at the end of the money? Bad credit holding you back? Want to become a real estate investor but haven't won the lottery? Learn how to fix your credit. Get out of debt and build true financial independence with real estate in 2 hours a week. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She'll show you how, without winning the lottery or working 10 jobs. And here's your host, Heather Wagenhall.
Welcome to the broadcast. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. And for this fabulous Saturday, April 3rd, 2010, we are broadcasting live from the Logma Hall in Payson, Arizona. And I am so excited because in studio I have all the way from China my dear friend Cotton Hill, who has come to America for other business, although I like to think that he was here for just this show, but he's going to be listening in on today's show. Thank you so much for joining us. Welcome, everyone, and for those of you who are joining us for the first time, we broadcast the Unlock Your Wealth radio program every Saturday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time and talk about crisis management and financial wellness tools designed to help everyone, man, woman, and child alike, manage their finances and attitudes for the single purpose of achieving financial independence. And I'm so excited. Woohoo! This week is national, well, I should say this week, this month is National Financial Literacy Month. Yay! Yay! And that's a pretty big deal considering that that's, one of the biggest challenges our country has as a nation. And being one of the leading nations of the world, we're rubbing off our bad money management skills onto others. What a shame, because all of these other countries that had good stewards of their personal finances have started to adopt some of the habits of Americans, like spending more than they make, living off of credit, buying things that they can't afford or that they have no business owning in the first place. And the whole point of National Financial Literacy Month is to help right that ship. And I'm so excited for today's broadcast because not only is it National Financial Literacy Month, but it is also the beginning of the full Keys to Riches Financial Freedom series. Yay! More applause. I know. I'm so excited, too. So if you dipped into this show halfway through last season, and you only got a few of the keys, never fear, because season 5 is here. And we're going to start all over from the very beginning, starting today with the first key in the Keys to Riches Financial Freedom series, acceptance and affirmation. I'm so excited because it's the first step that all of us need to take, whether we know anything about money or not, whether we're starting out for the first time or starting over because we've made some mistakes. In any case, this key is the pivotal key, and that's why it's the first one, because if we do not acknowledge and accept what we are doing, we can't move forward to correct it. I know. It's an aha moment. We have a fabulous show planned for you. I'm so excited. Our key guest is Sharon Lechter. She'll be joining us in the second hour, and we're going to check in with her. It's been a year since we've had a chat with her, and she has served on the President's Council for National Financial Literacy. So she's going to talk about that, and hopefully she'll tell us what else she's doing with regard to financial literacy and a few things that we can do ourselves to help teach our youngins about financial literacy to get them on the right path. Whether or not our road has been smooth, that's no excuse for us to not empower our children to be good stewards of their finances. And, you know, while we're teaching them, we can learn ourselves, and they'll never know, because one of the great things about kids is they think that we're the all-knowing, ever-popular, superhuman, fabulous encyclopedia of the universe, and we know everything. And so they're not going to know that you don't know and that you're learning right along with them. But what a great opportunity it is. So we're going to have Sharon in the second hour, in addition to Nuts and Bolts, for specifically what the key for the week is and how do we implement it into our lives. This hour is so fabulous. Our Investor's Edge guest is Jeffrey Taylor, and he is our millionaire bad boy gone sideways. He had money and then blew it, and he's going to talk to us about what happened, why it happened, and how he lost everything, and what he did to get back on top. And it was a long, hard road, and he has an incredible story of perseverance that he is going to share with us on today's show. I'm so excited. Additionally, we have Minutes on Your Money. We have our Millionaire Minute segment, which has evolved into its own show on Tuesday mornings at 6:30. And we also have News by the Numbers back for the new season, and Blair Cherrier is going to be our segment host this season for News by the Numbers. I'm so excited. In addition, she is co-piloting this broadcast with me. So if you are not in the chat room at the Blog Talk Radio show page, hop on in, say hi to Blair. Any questions or comments you have about today's broadcast, just send them to her. And if we get a chance to answer them, or you have questions for the guests, let us know and we'll work it into the broadcast. I'm so excited because she's also managing our Twitter followers, too. So if you can't listen live, you can at least get the flavor in 140 characters or less of what's going on during today's show, and you can download it later. That's the fabulous beauty about being on the Internet. We're also live, and we're podcasted through iTunes later. So never fear, you never have to miss another episode again. So I alluded to a new show we added to the lineup on Tuesdays, and our Millionaire Minute segment is clearly not enough time to really delve into what millionaires do, how they operate and think. So we have a full Millionaire Nuts and Bolts segment of 15 minutes fully dedicated to explaining in depth how each of these different characteristics work and how millionaires have adopted them into their lives to create their own financial independence. So if you would like a great little pump me up, tune in every Tuesday, and it's at 6:30 in the morning. So if you're not up that early, that's okay. You can always go back and download it later. But it's designed to start your day the millionaire way. And that's why I created that segment, because I've gotten some great feedback from everyone saying, I love the Millionaire Minute, but it's only a minute. And it's not really a minute. It's a little bit longer than that. But people have been asking, well, I want to know more. But this isn't the right venue for that, because we're trying to cram so much into these 2 hours, and we want to make sure we have enough time for our interviews. So I broke it out into its own show. So join us on the Millionaire Nuts and Bolts from Unlock Your Wealth Radio, Tuesdays at 6:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And as always, our midweek update, where we feature a new news theme for each week, whether it's bankruptcy, home improvement, giving you tips, tricks, tools, and information you can use and incorporate into your life right now, today, to get you on your path to financial independence. So how about some minutes on your money? Would you like some simple productivity tips? How about 29 of them? How about 29 ways to successfully ingrain a new behavior? This is very interesting. From Zen Habits, It says, our daily lives are often a series of habits played out through the day, a trammeled existence fettered by the slow accretion of our previous actions. So what is all that hyperbole? It says that, well, what we do every day is what we do every day, and it becomes a habit because we do it every day. Now, as you know, I'm a big fan of neurolinguistic programming, and one of the things that we have to do is focus on the mind and how we use the mind to materially change our behaviors in a single moment. And habits can be changed, and although it seems like it's difficult, it's probably because you haven't had the right tools to change a habit. You've probably heard on this show on previous broadcasts how we've done six-step reframes with neurolinguistic program. We did some with our coaching protege, Nikki Payne, and we also did it with our second coaching protege, Stephen Light. And we worked through identifying what the issues are that surround that particular habit and then incorporate new ways into our personality to take and change those responses that we have because they're on autopilot when it becomes a habit. And so zenhabits.net says, keep it simple. Habit change is not that complicated. And while some of the information they give you may seem overwhelming, it's only a few things that you really need to know, but everything else is just helping you to cement these concepts. So first, you must write down your plan. Identify the triggers and replacement habits, and then focus on doing those replacement habits every single time the trigger happens for at least 30 days. And they say that's it to getting it done. But here's the other 29 ways that you can take and really blast through them. The habit change cheat sheet is what they have compiled. They said only work on changing one habit at a time. It's extremely important, and that's why a lot of people fail at New Year's resolutions because they have a litany of things they want to change, and it's too jarring to the psyche to be able to do that. So just work on one at a time. Number two, they say start small. Smaller is better because habit change is difficult. And while trying to take on too much as a recipe for disaster, you just want to take and work slowly to integrate these new habits. It says if you want to exercise, just start with 5 or 10 minutes. You don't have to go chain yourself to the treadmill for 8 hours. Also, do you want to wake up earlier? How about just trying 10 minutes at a time? Start 10 minutes earlier and work on getting 10 minutes and adjust that. Instead of saying, I want to be up at 5 instead of 6 or 6 instead of 7, just try 10 minutes at a time, and that slow movement will be much easier to incorporate. One of my favorite sayings that someone shared with me about 20 years ago when I was getting really frustrated, and I was explaining to someone that I couldn't believe what was happening in my life, and they said, well, how did you not see it happening? Well, because it happened incrementally. And their statement that made me realize it was this: you would never let somebody knock you deliberately off track, but you can be nudged in the wrong direction. So if you start small with just 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there, that's the little nudge to get you back on track from how far you've gotten off track. And I like that one, to start small. And it says do a 30-day challenge. While someone, they said, came up with a magical 21 days to change a habit, they're saying it's a myth. I don't agree with them because there is studies done, and doctors talk about the 21 days. It's the magic number. But what the heck? 30 days is a good number to get you started. It says write it down also. Just saying you're going to change may not be enough of a commitment. Write it down and see it. Just like we do our affirmations at the end of this show, it's got to be visualized. Not just something you verbalize, but you must visualize. And so if you write it down, you can see it more concretely. Then your brain can incorporate that. Number five, make a plan. While you're writing down what it is you want to change, write your plan to do the change. It says, and this is all in what goes into a six-step reframe, why you want to change, what are your obstacles, What are the triggers that make you do this particular habit? And then who can you engender through support buddies and other ways to help you make this a success? Know what your motivations are and make sure that they're strong and write those down too. Number seven, don't start right away. In your plan, create a start date. It might be a week or so from when you write out the plan, and that's okay. Just because you want to change your habit doesn't mean you have to get going now. Now is better, but if you can't, that's okay. But make it official. Make it official when you start, and I will start this and not say tomorrow because what do we know about tomorrow? It never comes because when we think it's tomorrow, it's today. Isn't that amazing? So don't say, I'm going to start tomorrow. Say, on April 4th, 2010, I'm going to start this tomorrow. Write down all your obstacles. Make sure you go through what they are. Like if you've tried to change and haven't, figure out why. For every trigger, identify a positive thing that you can do instead of this reactionary habitual behavior. Watch the negative self-talk. You know I'm always talking about that curmudgeon inside of you. Don't let him get the best of you. Work on him and make sure, and that's why the affirmation process is so important, that he's saying the same thing you're doing. Don't let him talk you out of the things that you know are good for you. Stay positive. No negative thoughts here. Make sure that you have other strategies to incorporate to defeat any urges you might have to fall off the wagon. Be prepared for sabotage. Other people saying, oh, you've been doing good on your diet, just have this cupcake. So be prepared of what you're going to say to them politely to say, kiss my butt, I'm not doing that. But you don't want to say, kiss my butt, I'm not doing that. So you want to figure out another polite way, but prepare in advance and rehearse it so it's natural when you say, when you have to decline and when they're giving you the ambush. Number 17, talk to yourself. Make sure that you're your first cheerleader and that you are your biggest champion. Have a mantra and come up with some clever little saying. For quitting smoking, this guy had not one puff ever. But I kind of like using the 12-step program that all of the anonymous programs do for Alcoholics Anonymous, Overeater Anonymous, and they always have one that relates to whatever it is. And so I say to you, your mantra could be, because you don't want to make it like an all or nothing thing. Never and always are words that really don't have a foundation, like we know what they mean, but there's never a never, and there's and there's, or I should say, there's always a never, and there's never an always. So when you say it's always like that, you're like, always? Sure? Really? But not so much. So say this mantra, okay? I did a 30-day fast, and people are like, how could you go that long? And it wasn't about going that long. I didn't really mean to go that long, but the more I went, the further along I got empowered. But I didn't say, I'm not going to eat for 30 days. I said, just for this moment, I am not going to indulge. And that's all you have to say. Just for this moment, I am going to pass. We want to make it a positive thing. Just for this moment, I am going to pass on this opportunity. And do it. Pass on the opportunity. Okie dokie. Make sure that you reward yourself. You've got to have little milestones. It's not just about knowing what you know, but in NLP, you know what you know. And know how you know when you're there. And so make sure you give yourself regular pats on the back. Take it one urge at a time. Oh, this kind of goes with what I just said. Just for this moment, I am going to pass on this opportunity. Not one puff ever. In other words, no exceptions. It seems kind of harsh, but for quitting smoking, it's got to kind of be a necessity. You've got to make sure that it's every time, especially in the early phases, that you don't fall off the wagon. It's every time during that first 30 days that you take and you watch where you are and how you're going to get there. So you want to drink lots of water. Being hydrated keeps the brain functioning properly, and when we're dehydrated, we can cave at any moment on whatever it is that we're trying to do that. Make sure you renew your commitment often. That kind of sounds like one of our keys, review, revise, and recommit. And make sure that you engender others. Set up public accountability so if they catch you doing whatever it is, somebody's going to call you on it. And say, hey, wait a minute, you said you weren't going to be snacking, or if you're over there loading the vending machine with money, hey, I thought you were saving money and you were bringing your soda to work. So also avoid situations where you would normally perform this particular habit. So if it's, you know, money management one and you have girlfriends or guy friends that like to go out shopping all the time, that's probably not going to help you if you keep putting yourself in that position. You know, if you're diabetic and can't have sugar, standing in the middle of a candy store is probably not the best thing for you. And if you happen to fail, figure out what went wrong, plan for it, and try again. But you know what? I like Tom Hopkins' take on things. I never see failure as failure, but as an opportunity to learn and begin again. Okay? I never see failure as failure, but as an opportunity to learn and begin again. And remember, you never truly fail until you quit. You just keep finding ways things don't work. So if you stay focused and you persevere, even if you slip up once in a while, ultimately you will have your goal if you stay dug in and persevere. I got one more news story for you. A billionaire is giving away his fortune. An 82-year-old founder of a United Kingdom supermarket chain and other businesses honors a vow he made to God back when he was just a struggling young entrepreneur. Warren Buffett did it, Bill Gates did it, and now a lesser-known billionaire from Britain is doing it too. From Forbes.com, Albert Goubet put his entire business empire worth about $1.1 billion, with a B, dollars, into a charitable trust, fulfilling a divine pact that he made at the start of his entrepreneurial career. He made a deal with God several decades ago when he barely had enough capital to get his business ideas off the ground to share half of his fortune with the Almighty in return for some divine help with his finances. 5 decades later, nearly all of his fortune is going into a trust from which half of all the funds will be spent on projects connected to the Roman Catholic Church. The other half will be given to whomever the trustees deem appropriate. Goubet, a lifelong Catholic, will reportedly keep $15 million to tide him over during his old age, a modest sum. Goubet ranked number 880 on the Forbes 2010 list of the world's billionaires. He lives on the quiet British tax haven of the Isle of Man and has 2 children with his first wife. He started building his fortune in the 60s, when he established the Quick Save Discount supermarket chain in the United Kingdom. He sold the business in 1973 for $28 million. He then replicated the Quick Save business model in New Zealand, Ireland, and the U.S., investing profits from those businesses in real estate in the United Kingdom. Do we hear a theme here, folks? He invested in real estate. I actually know a billionaire. I need to have a billionaire on the show for you guys, and then you can pick his brain. A very dear friend, and I'm very fortunate to know him. And wouldn't you like to know how they get there? Wouldn't that be great? And, you know, it always ends up that they invest in real estate. They always do. So I'm telling you to short circuit the traditional way and use the keys that we teach here and go straight into real estate investment, and now is the best time. You're not going to find a better time to buy discounted properties and see not only capital appreciation but cash flow for you. So anyway, his move investing proved savvy. United Kingdom property prices have been on a steep upward trajectory. It leveled off a couple years ago. So in 95, while he was recovering from bad luck, he established the Total Fitness gym chain. And then 10 years later, he sold the chain to a British venture capital firm for $154 million. Goubet's philosophy is, I'm not one of these people that takes everything out and puts nothing in. The frugal and media shy, billionaire said in a television interview with the BBC in 1988. And at that time, he had put money toward building a new church for the Isle of Man's Catholic community. And John Nugent, the chairman of the new Goubet Foundation, said that he was trying to maximize his company's asset base. And he says he is confident that he can push the worth to $1.5 billion before he dies, Nugent told the Sunday Times. Isn't that incredible? I'm totally blown away. So anyway, it looks like we have Sharon Lecter calling in for the first hour. I made a mistake. And then we are going to have Jeff in the second hour. We have got Sharon coming up shortly. But first, we need to hear a word from our fabulous show sponsors. You're listening to Heather Wagenhals, Unlock Your Wealth Radio. We'll be right back after this.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Diradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Diradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twofortheroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Diradori. Call Diradori now at 480-661-9662.
Karen Gurm here. You probably recognize me as your segment host for News by the Numbers. Did you know I am also one of the certified NLP practitioners and a financial coach here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation? The most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Or visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Here I am. Oh, you thought I wouldn't show up? You thought you could take your credit cards, live beyond your means, spend all you want, not budget a plan, and avoid me? I'm your worst nightmare, baby. Do you know who I am? My first name is Bad, last name is Dead. I promise you, I'm the one that you'll never forget. Cause I can turn your whole life into...
You are listening to Heather Wagenhals, Unlock Your Wealth Radio. And I am so excited. It's been a year, I can't believe it, that we have had Sharon Lecter on our broadcast. But she's back again, of course, kicking off National Financial Literacy with us here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation. I'm so excited. I am quite the disciple of Sharon's. I'm very fortunate to be able to call her a friend, as well as someone I admire and hope to aspire to be like someday with my commitment to creating financial literacy for everyone. Sharon is a lifelong education advocate, and she is also the founder of Pay Your Family First, a financial education organization, and Youthpreneur, which is an innovative new way to spark entrepreneurial spirit in our children. In 2008, Sharon was appointed to the President's Advisory Council on Financial Literacy. She and 15 other members of the council, selectively appointed by President Bush, continue to serve President Obama and advise him on the need for financial literacy education. Sharon is an entrepreneur, an author, philanthropist, educator, international speaker, licensed CPA, and probably her proudest moments, a mother. She has been a pioneer in developing new technologies to bring education into children's lives in ways that are innovative, challenging, and fun, and remains committed to education, particularly financial literacy. In 1989, she joined forces with an inventor of the first electronic talking book and helped him to expand the electronic book industry into a multi-million dollar international market. Since 1992, she has dedicated her life professionally and directed her entrepreneurial efforts in the creation and distribution of financial education books, games, and other experimental learning products. She's been everywhere, and she's done so many great things. Most recently, she authored Think and Grow Rich, 3 Feet from Gold, in cooperation with the Napoleon Hill Foundation and Greg Reed, which was released last year, and I was at the book launch. I was so excited to be a part of that. And future projects include a new updated version of Think and Grow Rich, specific titles for women and children. She's also known worldwide as the co-author of the international best-selling book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and the Rich Dad series of books. And she comes to our broadcast today, and I'm so excited to welcome Sharon to our program.
Sharon, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you, Heather. I'm delighted to be with you again.
I am so excited. I can't believe it's been a year. Just the time flew by.
Oh, it's amazing. Getting old.
Yes, I know. I passed the four-decade mark last year, so I was like, ouch, okay. So now there's less.
It's a young thing.
well, thanks. So in a year, for those who are joining us for the first time in our broadcast, we kicked off Financial Literacy Month last year with you and talked about your participation in the President's Council for Financial Literacy. And now that you've had an opportunity to have worked at that for a year, share with us some of the things that you guys did with the council and how that worked.
Oh, certainly. Well, thank you for that. Yeah, the council, there were 16 of us. The chairman was Charles Schwab. And we really got off to a really good start getting some things out there, some financial literacy proficiency curriculum for middle schoolers and high schoolers. We had a national financial literacy challenge, which is ongoing again this year. You can go to ustreasury.gov's website and find that. And so we really, really pushed to get as much awareness out as possible. We have a new campaign that is no longer part of the council, but certainly was initiated there, where we're going to be doing a business owners, a small business, a honor roll for businesses that provide financial literacy for their employees. And that's actually going to be now handled with the AICPA and with SHRMA, which is the National Association for Human Resources Directors. And AICPA is the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. So those two organizations are coming together to really highlight those employers out there that are providing financial literacy for their people. And then we've always been, I personally have been a real advocate against credit cards that are predatory among our kids and on college campuses. That since, if you remember, in 1992, my oldest son went off to ASU and got into credit card debt. So I was pretty upset, not just with him, but at myself. And so I've really, that's when I dedicated my professional life to that as my passion as a parent to financial literacy. And as of February 22nd this year, I'm just delighted to say that the new Credit Card Act made some major changes that's going to help keep some of our kids on a better path. That act that went into effect on the 22nd of February had a lot of different provisions, but three in particularly I'm proud of. One is that credit card companies can no longer solicit kids with free T-shirts and free pizza on college campus within 1,000 feet of the campus or within 1,000 feet of campus events. And that is a huge step in the right direction. Secondly,
I remember back in college that's how my friend clothed himself. He just kept signing up for credit cards so he could get those free shirts.
Exactly. And that's it. More kids than not ended up getting multiple credit cards within their first week of being a freshman in college. And that is just, it's a huge issue because they're, number one, when the credit card company is on campus, it's a tacit endorsement by the university. So the kids think, well, this must be okay. They're right here on campus. And the other thing that they were doing was campuses actually were selling the kids' names to these credit card companies and making money doing that. And that is, they can still do it, but now they have to actually publicize what the contract is and how much money they're making, so it can no longer be a secret type thing. So that's really good. And then thirdly, as overall, credit card companies can no longer solicit to young people under the age of 21. The only way you can get a card if you're under 21 is, number one, to have a job so you can prove that you can repay it, or number two, have a co-signer who's over 21. And it's not going to stop kids from getting credit cards. They're still going to find a way to get around it. But at least it's what I call a teachable moment. Instead of it being looked at as just free money, yeah, the more I can sign up with, the more presents I get, the more free money I have, at least they have to stop and think about the fact that it has to be repaid and how am I going to repay it. And that gives us a teachable opportunity.
It sure does. And I've done a lot of debt counseling, and now I do financial coaching to help people build wealth. And I had some clients in just a couple weeks ago, and we're already starting to see the effects of these of the legislation in place, because traditionally I would have to sit there and crunch the numbers with my financial calculator in order to estimate how long it would take folks to pay off their credit cards. And now there's that section on the statement that says if you just make the minimum payment, it will take you X number of months or years to pay this off. But the irony in this situation was I said, oh, wow, you know, I haven't seen a new statement yet with these new Card Act legislations inside them. And I said, wow. And they said, well, what do you mean? And then when I showed them their statement, they hadn't even looked at it. So
right.
I'm wondering, some of that stuff is like, was it all for naught? If people still aren't reading it, I was just so kind of disappointed in that moment there. I was like, oh, I was excited. But I think that the value in the Card Act, by helping to teach our youngsters who are very impressionable still at that college age, even though we think we know everything at that age, to make better decisions. And I know that I'm working closely with our granddaughter to teach her how to build wealth through real estate. And so we got her a credit card that she's using while she's off at college that she had to apply for and co-sign for. And she works for the foundation. So it was a perfect opportunity for her. And I just think about how much further ahead that she's going to be when she graduates and goes off to medical school, as opposed to all of these other kids that didn't have that kind of parental stewardship, you know, or family guidance. And when that's missing and the school systems aren't doing anything either, now you have a big problem. And half of our poor decision-making in the mortgage markets this past decade that precipitated our current financial crisis were ineffective decision-making because people hadn't had the right foundation of financial literacy to decide up front, you know what, maybe I shouldn't finance 103% of my home's price right now today.
That's right, and you're exactly right. You know, I often say we need to let our kids stub their toe while they're still at home so they don't break their legs when they go off to college. Giving a child a prepaid debit card or the opportunity to make mistakes when they're in control of their own money is essential, because when they're out in the real world, you don't have that opportunity to guide them and mentor them. And many parents say, well, I just give them cash. Well, you know, when you give them cash, you become the ATM machine. And so I really recommend that parents, we've got one that we offer through Pay Your Family First, but has no fees attached to it. And instead of being a credit card where the kids can get themselves into really a lot of debt problems, use a prepaid debit card that you can go on and you can, again, it's a teachable moment where you can go online and see where the child has spent their money, because they're going to run out of money before they run out of month. They're going to, you know, by the 15th of the month, they're going to have no money, and it's going to happen. And so it gives you the opportunity to guide them through that process, and then they can see the choices that they made, not the choices that you made. And it actually gives you a buffer as a parent, because you can sit down with them ahead of time and say, so this is, you know, maybe it's $500 a month that you need. We're going to give it to you on a card, and it's your money. You're in charge of it, but you need to cover your expenses. And they learn from it. I had a mother call me about 6 months ago, and she said, Sharon, I just can't believe it. My son always needs these $150 basketball shoes. And last week we were at the store, and he said, Mom, I need new shoes. And I said, well, you've got your card. Go ahead and get them. She said, you wouldn't believe it. Not only did he buy $60 shoes, he was proud of himself. And that would never have happened had it been my credit card. But he had the opportunity to make the choice, and he chose value over brand and was proud of it.
And that's an opportunity that so many people miss, and I see it happen here in my family, where they just keep shoveling the cash. And I'm like, where is the learning in what you're doing? You can't just figure out, oh, they'll be okay. You know, spare the rod, spoil the child. It's the same kind of thing where if you don't teach them actively, you can't assume that they're going to get it through osmosis or some other way. We can't count on our school systems, obviously, to teach them about money. So it's up to us. And it doesn't have to be something where you're always constantly saying no or it's extremely arduous. I love what you've done with your program, because you let them be in control. You say, okay, here's your allowance, or here's what you have earned, and there you go, manage your money. And when they run out and all of a sudden, whoa, you know, they're stuck now. They're like, well, Mom, I need this. And they've already blown all their money. And that moment is your opportunity to teach. And you don't get that if you just keep shoveling out the cash. So I'm really glad that she was able to have that experience and the message sunk in, because you always wonder sometime, is it sinking in?
Well, and our kids, I mean, we have developed a society of instant gratification, and our kids have stopped setting goals and achieving them. And that's a huge element of self-esteem. A recent survey by Charles Schwab said high school seniors think that they're going to make $145,000 a year getting out of school. And it's like, that would be lovely if they all made it. The problem is, just a few weeks ago, Arizona is the number three state in teen unemployment. So you've got that dichotomy of, on one side, they think they're going to make all this money. On the other side, they're not finding a job. They're having to move back with mom and dad. Mom and dad themselves are having financial difficulties. And at the bottom of it, 94% of young people say, Jumpstart Coalition did a survey. 94% of our young people say they learn their money habits from their parents, from home. So if we're not demonstrating good financial habits, then our kids are not going to see that. And when you talk about just handing them cash, our kids, I call it the just charge it mentality. They're with us when we use our credit cards. They're with us when we just charge it. But they're not with us when we pay the bills. They're not with us when we're earning the money to pay those bills. And so you really need to expose them to both sides of the element, because it's so easy to throw plastic in and pay something. You don't feel that transfer of dollars from one pocket to the store pocket. And that's a very important element that we need to show our kids, that there's a value, there's a consequence to every purchase.
I know, it's like when you go into the casinos and they change out your dollar bills for those plastic chips. So it desensitizes you to how much you're actually giving them.
That's right. And we have a new game, Heather, called Thrive Time for Teens, which really allows these young people to experience the consequences of their decisions in a safe and a non-threatening manner. The kids love it. It's a fun game. And we really talk about the fact that our young people have not just their money that they invest, but their time, and that their future depends, is going to be determined by how they spend their time as well as how they spend their money. And it's a really fun game. It's very humorous. They might pick a card that says, you dropped your cell phone in the toilet, and cost you $200. You might be one where you left your wallet in the locker and didn't lock up your locker and somebody took your wallet and you've lost all your cash on hand. The importance of putting money in the bank or savings account as opposed to carrying a lot of cash. We have other things about doing things for charity that are positive and move you towards success. So it's a really fun and engaging way. One card they would pull says your employer says you went above and beyond the call of duty, you get a bonus. Another one says, your boss realizes you've been giving free food to your friends for a year, and he should fire you, but he docks your pay $100 and makes you start cleaning the toilets. So it's things that the kids it's a hoot. They really have a good time with it. But it really teaches them the basics of the importance of scholarships for school, the importance of getting your first car and understanding that there's gas and insurance that has to be paid for along with the car, the consequences of having the opportunity to start a business or create value and make money that way, the importance of charity and giving back. All of these things are tied into a life and money reality game called Thrive Time for Teens.
And can they buy that at a regular store, or is it only available on your website?
It's available at some of the teaching stores across the country, but primarily it's through PayYourFamilyFirst.com or ThriveTime.com either, ThriveTimeGame.com.
What other resources do you have with Pay Your Family First? Do you have programs that help parents facilitate the learning? Because they say, well, I'd love to teach my kids about money, but I'm not so good.
Absolutely. We have, in addition to the Thrive Time game, we have an 8-hour program that we do that uses the game, that teaches, that goes a little deeper in depth about college issues and having a car and credit cards and all themed around the game Thrive Time. But we also have something called the Youthpreneur Business Kit, Biz Kit, and it has a separate guide for the parents or the mentor to help a child walk through setting up their own business. And what I love about it is that it's very interactive, it's four color, and you walk through, there's 7 different phases of starting a business, and one, of course, is giving back, picking a charity to support. And as you go through, there's very simple questions every few pages that you answer, and when you're done, you pull out 7 of these pages, and you've just written a business plan. So it's kind of like a surprise bonus to the kids and to the parents, because most people think of doing a business plan as very, very intimidating. So we want to take that out of it, make it fun and engaging. And then in addition to that, if the student child does not know what they want to do, if they don't know whether it's babysitting or making jewelry or lawn care, We also have bubblegum machines that they can buy, and then they can go out and ask a business owner to support their business and put a gum machine in the business. So we really try to make it as simple and easy for the parents or grandparents or interested caring adults to teach the child about money in a safe environment where it's not so intimidating to the parent or the guardian or the mentor.
That's awesome. You know, I think about how important that is, because I remember when I was in one of Tom Hopkins' sales seminars 20 years ago, and he was talking about, you know, the importance and the power of handwritten thank yous, and how he would watch his mother after she would come home from a party or a dinner or an event, and she would sit there before she even went to bed, still in her ball gown, and she would pencil some handwritten thank you notes to the folks that she spent time with. And I thought that was neat, because he said that he caught that, and he says that more is caught than taught. And I thought about that, and with what you just said a bit ago about, you know, children mimic our behaviors, and if we're not good stewards of our own finances, there's no way I think we can expect our children to be good stewards of their money, because it just doesn't happen automatically. And if you do have good money management skills, it's still not going to translate 100%.
Because the kids, you know, again, if they're only with you when you're spending money, they don't realize that you're budgeting, that you're paying attention, that you're spending less than you earn. If you don't share that part with them, they don't get it. They just experience the and certainly as your kids get older and you become more affluent, it gets to be worse, because there's more money, there's more opportunity, and they don't realize that you had to work your way up the ladder. And so the kids' experience is they're going to step out of school and be at that same standard of living that you've reached. And it's a kind of a sobering experience for them when they realize that they can't keep living the way they wanted to if it's their own dime. And it's something that the kids need to figure it out. And we need to make sure they understand that value of what's in front of them. And I love you mentioned Tom Hopkins, because one of the really important part of our youthpreneur program is we also teach presentation skills. And it's not just salesmanship, it's truly presentation skills. We have an acronym called BFAB, which stands for Be Fabulous. And the individual letters stand for back straight, eye contact, firm handshake, ask questions and allow answers, and above all, be bold. And a very important part of the program is and it's fun, the kids have a good time. We practice fish handshakes, and then we go into the BFAB, and they have a great time. They love it. But as part of the Youthpreneur Biz Kit, we talk about going in and asking a business person to support your business, and we always have them write thank you notes, because I think it's very important that they get into the concept of gratitude and understanding that you have to thank people who are there to support you.
Well, I was always taught be nice to people on your way up, because you might need them on the way back down. And you never know what life has in store for you, and the best of intentions and the best laid plans can be interrupted by catastrophic events that had nothing to do with you but do affect you. And it's so important that no matter what, that you have financial literacy skills. And you brought up such a great point about kids of affluent parents, and those are the ones that scare me the most. And, you know, we're dealing with a 13-year-old at this point that's having those kinds of issues. And I'm like, no, this is not your money. This is our money. And your money is a much smaller pile. And you need to learn how to live by your pile of money and not by this pile of money. And it's so hard to communicate that, because there's a sense of entitlement with youth today that I don't know where it came from. But I think that the guilt of parents and not wanting to be like their parents, although they make effective decisions because their parents were so good, and they've kind of relaxed the rules and they don't say no when they should be. And all of that translates, you know, it's not just about behavior, but it translates into money management skills. And we have a guest coming up this new season that I'm so excited to have on the show because he inherited millions and he blew through it all. He broke himself and had to come to grips with, oh my goodness, what on earth did I just do? There's no more money left. And he had to start all over and learn financial literacy that he was never taught along the way because, you know, that you just assume that somebody's going to take care of that because if you don't see your parents actively pulling out the bills and writing the checks, if you have a bookkeeper that does that or a business manager, you never see that part. You're right. Kids never see the hard work that goes into managing the money and earning the money. They just see the spending of the money. And I'm excited to have this guest on because it's going to be neat to hear from somebody who thought he had a safety net and then lost it.
And that happens so often if you think about young sports stars and even movie stars and television stars that make a lot of money really fast. And all of a sudden their career wanes and they have nothing left because they blew through it. They didn't, and it just happens over and over and over again, particularly young sports stars who end up with these multi-million dollar contracts. And yet as soon as the playing years are over, all those new friends they developed and all those adoring fans disappear, and so does the money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that we have to get. And when you talk about the sense of entitlement, I really almost say we've blown through the sense of entitlement when kids think they're entitled to something, and we're now in a new age of expectation. They don't just think they're entitled. They know they're, and they just expect it, and which is even worse. And so we've got to get them to understand that they've got to earn it.
You're so right on about that. What do you think is going to happen if we don't do anything else?
Well, 2 years ago, we were still writing about the baby boomers and the greatest transfer of wealth in history. Today, we're writing about the baby boomers and the greatest transfer of debt. If we don't do something to prepare our kids and make them understand that they can make money on their own, I mean, the self-esteem issue is a huge one. But if we can, what got us out of the Great Depression was small business and entrepreneurship. That's what's going to get us out of what we're happening today. Bringing it back to home, coming back to an entrepreneurial mindset, starting small businesses, and starting to provide for yourself. And if everybody can get back to the point of you spend less than you earn, we'd all be out of business and things would be a whole lot better. But people don't spend less than they earn. They get themselves in this kind of debt. So what we need to do is really educate our young people. And we can't wait for the school system to do it, Heather. We cannot wait for that because it takes years. We keep trying. I keep knocking on that door, and I'm not going to give up. But we have to provide the tools to parents, and parents have to stop and take that time. And that's one of the problems in our society is we're all going at warp speed through our lives, and we're not taking the time to do what's essential for our own children. And they're all, a recent Pew survey came out, 68% of baby boomers still support an adult child. That's a frightening statistic.
It is. It's a travesty. You know, it's a travesty. Here's where I usually look at it differently, and I've said this to parents that have done this, and they look at me like I have five heads. But I'm like, shame on you for damaging your child. And they're like, no, I'm helping my child. And I'm like, you have a 45-year-old that has no idea what it's like to make a payroll, to earn a living legitimately where the parent wasn't just subsidizing them. And and the parent is like, well, I need to do it. How else are they going to pay for, you know, their kids? And I can't, you know, let my grandkids starve. And I said, but they don't have to be eating caviar either. The best thing that you could do is to stop the subsidy and let them figure it out because it's not your issue, it's their issue. And as long as these parents keep involving themselves and keeping their kids on financial life support, number one, they're never going to have the reason or of why they should be out there earning their own living instead of mooching off of their parents. But, I mean, where do you derive personal value and satisfaction when you're taking, even if it's your parents? Where do you get your personal satisfaction of accomplishment and your self-esteem from? And I think it's such a travesty when adults continue to financially support their children. Because, you know, they're saying, well, they're a good kid, and I'm a great parent. And I'm like, well, you failed somewhere, right?
Yep.
I mean, I don't remember, you know, that going on. My mother worked 20 jobs. She was always doing something, hustling something, working at the mall. You know, then we had our little home newspaper, and I had my lawn mowing business. When I was 11, I was out mowing lawns to contribute to the family because it was just me, my mom, and my brother. And I don't remember my grandfather, who had more than enough money, subsidizing her. And goodness knows, my mother hasn't subsidized me. And I find that is just, I don't know, I mean, I just have this, like, sick feeling in my stomach talking about it. It's just, it's such a travesty. And it's so deceitful to do that to another human being, to financially support them. Because in my estimation, if one of my parents came to me to give me a handout and say, no, just take it, it would make me feel like they think I'm a failure and I can't do it on my own. That's how I would feel if my parents came to me to give me money at the adult age I'm at.
The old adage of the science experiment, where you go to the science fair and you can look around and tell whose parents were involved in their projects.
Oh,
really,
yeah.
It is something, you know, and it's what I teach. And as a parent, I tell you, I've done it wrong probably more times than I've done it right. The same thing where it is exactly what you just said. If you support your child financially, you think you're being a great parent, but what you're doing is subliminally those children are saying they don't think I can make it on my own. And you become an enabler, not a mentor.
Mm-hmm. That's a great way to put it. I had Larry Winget on the show last season. And it was right when his Your Kids Are Your Own Fault book came out. And I loved what he said. He says, you know, we're not raising kids. We're raising adults. And you have to design the perfect 35-year-old and work backwards. And I loved that strategy. And what does a 35-year-old need to know? Well, they need to know how to manage their money. They need to know how to be a good steward in relationships with significant others and how to be a good employee, how to be a good boss. Like, there's so many things that they need to know. And I don't think by preparing your children for their adulthood is robbing them of their childhood, because learning is fun. I always enjoyed learning, and I loved hanging around adults and listening to them and their wisdom. And maybe I was kind of, you know, a nerd or cut from a different cloth. But you can make all of these things exciting, just like you have done with all of the projects that you've been involved in, and your commitment to financial literacy among our youth has really been able to make it easier on parents. And I don't know why they wouldn't be doing it, you know, especially if they don't have the skills or the knowledge base that they feel confident enough in transferring knowledge about money management. The information is out there. You provide a guide for them to be successful in mentoring their children to become good financial stewards. So I guess I still have some sort of disconnect sometimes with the rationale of the general public sometimes, and I just can't embrace it. And sometimes that stymies me in, well, how do I address this if I can't wrap my arms around or embrace concepts that people are dealing with? When it comes to stuff like this, it's so important, financial literacy. And I wasn't taught about money, you know, because money was always so tight. You know, I just had to work and I had to give it to my mother. And my mother didn't have the greatest money management skills. And so that's what I took into the real world. And by the time I was 23, I was knee-deep in debt. Actually, I was further than knee. I was up to my eyeballs in debt because I thought I had an idea of how rich people were. But since I never really knew any rich people, I had no idea how to emulate them. So I kind of just, you know, made it up as I went along. And I thought, well, if I can manage my minimum payment on this credit card, I must be rich because that's what all those other people that are driving these fancy cars are doing, right? And it's like, oh, no, no, they're not. Actually, they're living within their means. And then so it was a rude awakening for me. And had I had a parent that was able to have access to the resources that you're providing, could have made such a huge difference in where I am today. And I'm glad I am where I am. And I've learned some incredible lessons along the way. But I think that we're in trouble as a nation and a society with this now from entitlement to expectation mentality of our youth. And how do we bridge that gap?
One step at a time and bringing it back home is the only way to bridge it, and one child at a time. It's you know, it does almost feel like an insurmountable problem, but again, we have to take the vision of the worldwide problem and bring it back into our home. And if we can start manifesting good financial habits at home, it will spread. It'll catch on, and it will actually end up impacting our communities. But we have to take the first step, and it's really hard. Inertia sets in, and we end up, as I said, we're all running 100 miles an hour, multitasking through life, and we're forgetting the most important thing, and that's our children. But I will say, and I almost kind of give the parents a bit of a off the hook, the parents are so vitally important. But again, in today's world, there's the kids by the age of 10 are getting so much more influence from their peers and from the internet and from the outside world, television. It's really tough. I mean, I know many people that have three kids, and two of them are great stewards of money, and one of them is not, or you know, all three of them are in financial trouble, or one is a superstar and the other two are having difficulty in their grades. Same home, same rules, same environment. So, you know, it really is something that you have to love your kids through it and make sure that you are doing your absolute best to support them and mentor them in the educational process without becoming an enabler, and pay attention to who their friends are and where they're hanging out and what they're being exposed to. It's so vitally important. But it's hard because parents aren't with their kids 24/7 anymore. And you don't know what's happening to the kids, where they are. So we really need to start those conversations and those communications so kids can feel free to talk about what's happening in their lives.
When can parents start teaching their children about money? What's a great age?
Well, I love that question. I answer it with another question. At what age do you think a child knows the difference between a $1 bill and a $20 bill?
Probably like 5 or 6, I would guess.
Yep. 4 or 5, they'll know which one they want. And so they are, they know the value. They know which one they're going to take out of your hands first. And that is when you start talking about money in a value proposition way. I mean, if you're at McDonald's, you can talk to the kids about the fact that one company makes the straws, another company makes the pieces of paper that wrap around the hammer. Just making them aware of the business world around them is something that you can start talking about. If you start looking at if you're at a store and you say, here, this, you know, this pair of jeans is $100. Here's the same brand, maybe last year's model. It's only $20 because it's on sale. Which one do you think we should get? And, again, participating in that conversation so that the child can feel part of the conversation and not be dictated to but be part of the decision. And that gives them some control over their own destiny. And the sooner we can let our kids feel that they have the ability to make a decision, the quicker they'll grow into responsible adults.
I like that. Last year, I got to be at one of your book signings when 3 Feet from Gold came out. What do you have on tap for this year? What are your big projects you're working on now?
Well, thank you for asking. Yeah, 3 Feet from Gold is still going strong, and would love the support on that as well. The game, Thrive Time for Teens. And I have a new book that's going to be coming out that actually Napoleon Hill himself wrote in 1938, and I've gone brought it. It's been hidden for 72 years, and we're going to be working on it. Hopefully it'll get out probably first quarter of next year.
Oh, I'm excited.
It's called Outwitting the Devil. It's an interview with the devil about what keeps people from becoming successful, how they hold themselves back.
Oh, I love that. I love that. We focus on that quite a bit, and how do we reframe and reposition ourselves for success. So I can't wait to read that when it comes out. That'll be exciting. I really enjoyed 3 Feet from Golden because my husband's had such a great ride with NASCAR. I liked how you featured Mike Helton in there, and I thought that was kind of neat.
Yeah, it was amazing. All the stories, we talked to them not necessarily about their success stories, but about what when they had that deepest, darkest moment, what they did to keep going. And many of the folks that we interviewed, I mean, if they had stopped and given up, we wouldn't. You know, NASCAR wouldn't be the same today as it was back then. We wouldn't have Velcro. Can you imagine a life without Velcro?
I'm looking at all my cords Velcroed together.
Yeah, Mrs. Fields Cookies. All of those people, Chick-fil-A restaurants, and that's what we wanted to take that same wisdom of Napoleon Hill and bring it into today's environment. So as you're driving down the road and you see a NASCAR sign, you're going to remember his story, Mike's story, and it's the same lessons of when Think and Grow Rich was released during the Great Depression, but it's relevant and it's in today's world. And you're going to be able to remember those nuggets that of encouragement, of what they said to themselves, how they kept going. We had over 35 people that we interviewed for the book 3 Feet from Gold, and every one of them was an incredible gift to interview because we heard their stories of inspiration and how they kept going.
And I think that when we are able to follow someone's chronicle of their success, and it's funny how people are like, oh, he was an overnight success. It only took 12 years.
Yep.
And when we can see how others had to face adversity, and some of their challenges are way worse than anything that we'll ever have to encounter in our lifetimes, and you look and say, oh, wow, they had that to come up against, and they still were able to be successful. Well, it makes my problems not feel so bad, so what am I waiting for?
Exactly. Yeah,
I think that's very encouraging. Well, you know, we're down to the edge of our time here, and I've really, it's flown by just like the last year has, and it's always such a pleasure to have you on. And if people want more information about you and what you're up to, where can people find it on the web?
They can visit my blog, SharonLechter.com, or everything can be accessed through our overall, the mothership, which is called PayYourFamilyFirst.com.
The mothership, I like that.
Yeah.
The mothership, how apropos.
PayYourFamilyFirst.com.
PayYourFamilyFirst.com, where all the resources and tools are available. What would you like to leave us some final parting thoughts about financial literacy and the importance of it?
Well, I'd like to acknowledge and congratulate the people that are listening to your show because they've already taken the first step. They're listening to you, Heather. They're paying attention. And really understand that it's not going to happen unless you make it happen. Your children are not going to be prepared with financial education unless you take the effort to do it. And literally, as I said, the Thrive Time game, it's $29. I didn't develop it to make myself rich. I developed it to really give parents a tool. So for $29 and for 1 hour, you can give your child the gift of a lifetime, financial education. And you don't have to use the Thrive Time game. There's lots of downloadable things that are even free. But just spending that 1 hour a week, 1 hour every other week, talking to your kids about money will give them something that they understand. They want to learn about money. They know that that's relevant to their lives. They know it's relevant education. So take the time. We have on my website, I have a download of 31 questions to get that conversation started with your child, what you can ask them, how you can start that dialogue. So I try to make it just as easy as possible for people to get into the mode of financial education. So please visit Pay Your Family First, download those questions. They're free. There's no charge. And just help share that message of financial stability through financial education.
Well, thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to have you on and to kick off National Financial Literacy Month once again with you. So good luck, and I hope to see you soon.
Well, I will look forward to that. Heather, thank you so much for having me.
Great. Well, it's been a pleasure as always. And we have more of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio coming up right after this.
Are you a referral partner of the Unlock Your Wealth Radio program? Would you like to promote your products and your services on our show? Learn about the benefits that our featured advertisers receive being part of an exclusive program where the listeners are seeking financial independence and are in need of your insurance, finance, real estate, and investment services. Call now at 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Reach the people who need your help the most with the Unlock Your Wealth radio show today.
Hi, I'm Tony Stewart, driver of the number 14 Office Depot Old Spice Chevrolet, and you're listening to Heather Wagenhals on Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. It's everybody's favorite segment, the Millionaire Minute. This is where we crawl into the heads of top millionaire thinkers and put out 60 seconds of tools you can incorporate into your life right now, today. And the 10 Secrets of Millionaires Money Management from Kimberly Palmer says, it turns out millionaires are just like us, but they have a lot more money. When asked about their secrets to success, they don't cite anything magical or rare, but rather a steady application of wise investing strategies, hard work, and believe it or not, a degree of frugality. Number one, millionaires start early to avoid financial pitfalls. Number two, millionaires believe that they are capable. Number three, millionaires articulate their vision for success. Number five, millionaires insure against life's little risks. Number five, millionaires work hard and say that luck will come when you work hard. Millionaires also practice smart budgeting, and they track what they make and spend religiously. What's the next one? Oh, millionaires do what they love. They say, sure, a career in finance might come in handy with a hefty annual salary, but you won't excel at something you don't enjoy. Millionaires also decide how much money they really want and set that as a target to go after. Millionaires also invest against the grain. They make investment decisions based on the exact opposite of what everybody else is doing. And last but not least, millionaires live beneath their means. On the same note, even though she's a millionaire, no one would know it, How to Go from Broke Like a Rockstar author. She says that she recommends saving at least 10 to 25% of your income and avoid buying status items like fancy cars or mansions. And she says, after all, bling doesn't make a millionaire, and in fact, too much of it can prevent you from ever becoming one. Now, fully and completely integrate these habits now. See yourself in this way. Look forward into the future and watch how differently people will respond to you. Imagine yourself with these successes already. Take and create some affirmations with these tools as well to reinforce what you have just integrated into your personality, and that's your Millionaire Minute. Remember to tune in to the Millionaire Nuts and Bolts from Unlock Your Wealth Radio on Tuesday mornings at 6:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, so you can start your day the millionaire way. Now, I'm so excited about our Investor's Edge guest because it's a roller coaster tale. Jeffrey Taylor has an extensive background in the equipment leasing, banking, commercial real estate, and motion picture industries. As a result, he has a successfully guided movie makers to raise money for their film projects and is considered an expert in private placement equity and tax-enhanced transactions. On a personal note, he has financed several movies which were filmed in the U.S. with post-production in Germany and distribution in the Far East. Prior to forming Showbiz Management Advisors in 2001, he held a senior position with Citibank, Pete Marwick, and the Actors Fund, which is a nonprofit charity where he served as their CFO. He is a well-esteemed, well-heeled author. He's no stranger to the self-help book market, and he has authored two textbooks for the equipment leasing industry. And what is very interesting is his rocky road that we're going to talk about today. And one of the things that he wrote about was his autobiography of life as a recovering alcoholic. A gentleman drunk won a screenplay in the Beverly Hills Film Festival in 2009, and his most recent book, Going from W-2 to 1099, delivers an entertaining account on his perspective on how to start new businesses. The book is an excellent resource for corporate professionals. Pardon me. And he's currently working on his next book, Film Finance for Beginners. Welcome to the broadcast, Jeffrey Taylor. Jeffrey, welcome to the show.
That's a great opener.
If I don't die through it first.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Maybe you need to drink some water.
I've got some. I've got tea here, too, that kind of coats my throat.
That happens this time of year.
I know. I'm up in Payson, and it's so dry up here. So.
Yeah, you got the pollen, and you got all the tourists coming into town.
Bringing their cooties with them.
Yeah. I love listening to your stories about millionaires or blank and millionaires do this. I'm third-generation millionaire, and I got a laugh. And when people start telling me what millionaires are like, that's like telling people what Catholics are like or Jewish people are like. I mean, mm-hmm. It's just so funny of classifying a group of people. I find millionaires are very unique and everyone is distinctive.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we feature different traits every week. The litany goes on, but at some point, some listener is going to identify with one set of them.
That's absolutely correct. And I also find that a lot of people, you know, push their books or their DVDs or, you know, how to do it. And I find that the true millionaire really doesn't listen to anybody.
And that is one of the traits of them that we've covered on a previous show, that they cut their own path. They blaze their own trail.
Yeah, and they take their chances. And Dad was kind of funny because Dad always said he had more losers than winners. And I said, well, I don't understand. How can you lose more than win and still become successful? He says your winners have to cover your losers. It's more like, you know, an oil rig where some may not produce and others do. I said, well, maybe you're not just good at oil. He says, yeah, that's the whole concept of diversification. True millionaires basically are in like 10, 12, 15 projects. So anybody who thinks linearly usually can't make it because they'll either make it or lose it all, and that's where the millionaire doesn't take that kind of chance. Millionaires tend to be very conservative, even though we think we're all crazy.
I like that. Let's talk about being a third-generation millionaire. Let's explore that. Because
well, you grow up in a fantasy land, and you don't really know it. Like people say, you know, what do you mean everyone doesn't fly first class? Or what do you mean, you know, the chauffeur doesn't take you to the airport? When I got to college, my favorite phrase was, Daddy will always pay for it. And people would, you know, beat me up, and they basically said I was spoiled and arrogant and condescending. Because when you grow up in that environment, you really don't know, and that's what always impressed me with people that grow up in trailer parks or grow up in poverty. they really don't necessarily know what they don't have because they've never seen it. They become isolated. So it's the same thing with the children of millionaires. You become so isolated in that world, you really have no idea what the rest of the world lives like, and that's how I get to understand, like, how Obama and Bush live in the White House and forget about reality.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have a personal account of that because I grew up from nothing, and I'll always remember my stepson when he was like 9 or 10. My husband sold his company, and the plane went with the company,
mm-hmm.
and he had to fly with his sitter to come meet us where we were, and the first thing he said is, I didn't know a plane had that many seats, because he had never flown on anything other than a private jet.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, I mean,
and it's very common, but then again, to the outside world, people look at us like, oh, my God, you're spoiled and blah, 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 you can't relate. But look, you know, God gives us what he gives us. And the point is that, you know, you get those cards and how you deal with it is fine. And if you want to get out of poverty, you will. If you want to lose your wealth, you will. I mean, you know, there are all these choices out there.
Absolutely. And, you know, life is what we make of it. And it doesn't matter where you start. It's where you end up, and
mm-hmm.
everything else is just a part of the ride. And I know people always say it's about the journey, it's not the destination. And if you think in the total tenure of the journey, the destination is 6 feet under.
That is correct, except some religions don't even believe in heaven and hell. My, you know, I grew up Jewish, so I came from the earth, I'm going back to the earth. So if I'm going to make it, I got to make it now. That's why I'm so preoccupied with money. Your last speaker had a very interesting analogy. You know, when do you teach a kid the difference between a 1 and 20? I like to go a step further. My father would walk me down the streets when I was like 4, 5, and 6. He'd see someone on the street with no money, and they'd be asking for money, and Dad said, watch this. And he would try to convince the guy, the poor person, to give him like 25 cents or 50 cents, and Dad said if the guy who has nothing gives him 25 cents or 50 cents, he would give him $5 in return. And he showed how to develop trust in people.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah, because education doesn't come intellectually. That's why I'm fascinated by the people that say you can intellectualize this, you can follow this, you do this. And I have to laugh because it really isn't. You have to go with your gut instinct. What truly develops and creates the mind in such a way that you can see things that other people don't. It's the visionary who becomes wealthy. And at this point in my life, I sell my books, but I couldn't care less whether I sell one or I give them away because I don't need the money. I do it because people say, how do you do it? And I go, here, read.
It's right there. This is how you do it, step by step.
No, that's how I did it. No, 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 no. That's how I did it. I don't tell people how they can do it. I don't think anybody can really do that.
Well, you know, I disagree with you because while we add our own flavors and influences, if someone gives you at least a guideline or a plan, you can pick and choose what works and then add your own influences, but it gives you at least a starting point.
That may be true, but how many people who are in the consulting advisory business actually track their clients and see how they are 5 years later to do relapse studies or statistic studies to see if it really works on a long-term basis? How many people can keep running that race? How many people can stay in it? Very few people will ever track their results.
Well, I know that I have with what we do, and I've got almost 10 years of history myself. And most everyone has sustained. There's only one person that I haven't been able to stay in touch with, but everybody else has been able to sustain what they accomplished through the process. I mean, that's important to me, your results. I'm only effective if what I'm teaching people can incorporate into their lives and make it worth their while.
Then you may be that 1 in 20 who are an exception, and I think that's great because I'm looking at your website now, and I see you're on the radio, you're standing up in front of an audience with a chart. I think you're talking to somebody with a poster in the background. So, yeah, you may be one of the few people, but I meet a lot of people that think they're going to sell the secrets to success for $199, $299. You know, those people are just tool makers making a lot of money.
Right, and And their purpose is different, I think, or their goal is different than probably mine. And theirs is to make themselves money. But mine is to leave a legacy and materially change how people view money.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we don't do that, we're going to be in serious trouble, because what we have so far has demonstrated as a country and as a nation leading the example that other countries are beginning to follow, that clearly we have no idea how to manage our money. And the message that we're sending is live beyond your means, buy now, 90 days, same as cash, no payments for, 6 months. And
yep.
It's okay because you deserve it. Not that you've earned it, but you deserve it. And that's the message that we're sending to the world, and that it's okay to not save, and that the government's going to be there to take care of you.
Mm.
And I can't, allow that to be our legacy, or at least certainly not mine. And I haven't personally had any children of my own, and so this is my legacy. And I feel like the kid walking along the beach with his grandfather as the kid's throwing the starfish back into the ocean. And if I can make a difference with one, then I've made a difference, and that's all that matters, is that it's a difference and it's measurable. Whether it's the biggest difference or not, that will, time will only tell what that is.
All right, good for you. I can't relate, but good for you.
Yeah, so, but that's...
Yeah, no, see, I borrowed up to $200,000 on a credit card because I said even at 18% to 24%, if I can get a 36% yield and make 12 points in the deal, I don't care what it costs.
Mm-hmm.
See, I don't... The traditional stuff says, save for tomorrow. I could be dead tomorrow. Or, borrow at the lowest rate, 5%. That's why it drives me nuts when people say, what's your rate? What's your rate? What's your rate? Most of us don't think equity. Most of us don't think entrepreneurship. We're so brought up in a debt-oriented or an avoidance of debt or saving. And I'm saying is that's the constraint that really prevents a lot of people from becoming very financially successful. They become successful with family, and they become successful if their kids don't go on drugs. Don't get me wrong. That's good. And they do have a house, and they do go on vacations, but I can't relate to that. I'm always looking at how to do something that really makes a major difference.
Well, and I think that what sets you apart from the general population who are satisfied with mediocrity is your perspective. What you just said about borrowing on your credit card, I mean, there's good debt and there's bad debt. And one of my husband's famous sayings is, it's not how much it costs you, it's how much you'll make.
Right.
And that's,
I like that concept, because you're looking to the future and you have to be able to say, okay, what am I going to do with it? If you buy a TV set, then I have to agree with your prior guests and your comments. That's not going to create wealth. That's just the feel-good, watch the TV, drink the beer, get the wireless, get the iPod. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about when you borrow, where you could take the capital and do something with it.
Right.
And yeah, so you're right. Then there is good debt and bad debt.
Yeah, and financing the TV is not the most brilliant idea on the planet.
No, not unless you're going to have a party and invite people over and charge them.
Yeah, exactly.
For like 3D TV or something, so they could see Tiger Woods or see a football game because they can't afford their own 3D TV.
Right.
So, and those are what, $2,500 units, so not everybody can afford it.
Oh, yeah. There's not a whole lot of people that can afford it, but there'll be a ton of them going out to buy one today. That's
yes.
Fair.
Right.
And
Best Buy's giving 18% no interest loans, and I don't know who else is. The biggest problem I have is you look at the 3D technology, Samsung, LG, and Sony control 90% of the market, with the insides. The two of them are from Korea, one of them is from Japan. We have none of that technology in the United States. Yet you look at the original TV manufacturers, you got RCA. And you go through and you look at where did the U.S. fail? The U.S. failed that we really lost control of our own destiny. So when a government and an economy can lose control, whether it's manufacturing of cars, manufacturing of TV, manufacturing of solar panels, the real problem right now is how do you create jobs and how do you get people who, let's say, don't want to be entrepreneurial, get the income so that they don't have to go into debt? That's our biggest issue.
Well, but, that theory applies, too, with just the general laborer or worker. you know, it's not how much you make, it's what you save. And how, you know, you leverage yourself. Are you leveraging yourself to make more money? I mean, because some people like, you know, just doing what they do at the same place and they're really good at it. But if they're smart managing their money and they leverage themselves appropriately for financial gain, you know, and buying a TV is gratification. That's not making you any money, again, unless you throw a party and charge and have everybody come and subsidize, you know, your luxury good item. But I think, you know, the focus that people need to have is precisely the guy that's buying the 3D TV on his credit card and making minimum payments is the same guy that's going to tell you that you're crazy and you've lost your mind for borrowing $200,000 for a business deal.
Yeah, I know, but if people tell me I'm crazy, that's their observation. I'm not going to change them. But I don't save at this point.
I basically buy
whatever money I have. I'll put it into distress companies. I'll go into partnerships. I'll invest in the future. And, again, if my winners cover my losers, I win. If I don't, I lose. Then I go back to my theory of barter. I go and I find someone that's willing to lend me a cow or give me a cow for free labor. So I never worry about – the only thing that could really, really give me a problem is if I become disabled, I'm still alive, and I can't work. That's the only situation I have not provided for.
Mm-hmm. So it's clear that you are, like many other entrepreneurs, and most of us are all gamblers, and we play the game to win, but we lose. And, you know, most of the time we lose more than what we win, just like your father said. Look at Michael Jordan. I mean, he missed more baskets than he made, and he was still the greatest player in basketball.
That is correct. But you don't lose more than you win. I mean, you lose more times, but your winners cover your losers.
Yeah, because when you do win, you win big.
Oh, it's big. And he always said it's 1-3, 1-4.
Yeah.
So if you're going and you're hitting loser, 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 then you know that something's wrong with what you're doing.
Well,
and if you have a series of wins, if you have wins, then there's a high probability you're going to be losing at some point, that's a short-term streak, and that's when people start losing it. Because when people make a lot of money, what's their first reaction? They buy the mansion, they put in the pool, they get the cars, because they haven't provided for the fact that probability says they're going to be coming up to a couple of losers.
Mm-hmm.
Look what happened in the latest recession here. People left Wall Street with $200,000, $300,000 in severance. People took their money out of their 401ks, those that were able to keep it. And what'd they do? They kept the kids in private school. They kept not telling people they were really in trouble. They put on their false faces. They stayed at the country club. And then all of a sudden, after 18 months and 2 years, the economy is still not back on its feet, and they've run out of money. I don't feel sorry for those people. They didn't provide for their own future, and yet if they had learned from people, they would have realized that everyone gets some wins and they get some losses. You cannot be a winner your entire life. I don't think it works that way.
No, you're right. It doesn't. I mean, or at least I've yet to hear the story of somebody that has only won. And I think,
only,
you know,
one?
Pardon me?
I'm trying to think. You mean a person who's only won? Nope, I don't know of any.
Yeah. Well, in my thought, you know, whenever I get sales people at my real estate company that tell me these unbelievably high closing ratios,
mm-hmm.
I say, well, you're just not working hard enough.
Yeah.
because your ratios are high because you're not taking any calculated risks, and they're not doing the work. That's why their closing ratios are so high. Because anybody that works hard in real estate doesn't have a high closing ratio. They're like,
How big is your agency?
It's a small niche brokerage, and we just work with people and teach them how to build wealth through real estate. So I've got, you know, 7 agents right now. That's it.
So you teach them all about, like, duplexes and family housing and that kind of stuff and short sales and foreclosures and all the good ways one can make money in real estate.
Yes, and how to build long-term cash flow and residual income. I was a stockbroker in the early 90s, and then I kind of switched over to mortgage lending because it was easier to give money away than it was to ask for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so from a sales perspective, I thought that that was a great move for me. And I learned
wow.
so much, and then I went from mortgages to real estate because I said I could have 1% of the loan amount or 3% of the purchase price, and it made real quick sense what side of the fence I needed to be playing on.
Yeah, so you learned leverage real fast. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I took all of that knowledge combined with standard mortgage underwriting guidelines and some of the best savings and investment rates for personal finance from all over the world, and I created this program that shows people like where they need to be and how they can systematically build wealth and still become millionaires, whether or not they're an entrepreneur. They can just be a plain salaried employee, but I show them how to use different types of government financing and programs out there to accumulate systematically, safely, where they minimize their risk, they create sinking funds, they insure themselves for success, all sorts of things. And so that's what we do. I mean, this radio show is just an extension of that, of the seminars and things that I teach. So that's why I keep
That's cool. Going. I'll have to. I got 17,000 readers in my newsletter. I'll have to tell them about you. Well, because I love promoting people that live here in Arizona. I think it's a wonderful state. I've only been here 5 years now, and I just think it's a wonderful place to live.
Well, consider yourself officially welcomed from a native. I was born and raised here.
No. The only people that were born here live on the reservation.
Well,
your picture doesn't make you look like you're part
here,
of the tribe. What?
I said my ancestors aren't from here, but I was born here in Arizona.
Oh. Okay, they dropped you off on one of the dirt roads. I understand, like, Shea Boulevard used to be all dirt.
Oh, I know. We would horseback ride out there. It was
yeah,
crazy.
See? And I met a guy this morning that takes New Yorkers that come out here and puts them on ATVs or whatever they're called and takes them out to the desert and shows them how to shoot AK-47s. And he was at the Hilton because I'm throwing a party for my wife tonight at the Hilton. And I see all these ATVs out front. And he's telling me all about his business. And he teaches people like 80 years old how to drive these things. They go up to 45 miles an hour, shows you how to use these all-terrain things. And then if you want for extra money, he'll show you how to shoot rifles in the desert. And I said, oh, my God. I said, how well do you do? He says, we're always sold out. He says, because you can't do that on the East Coast.
I know. It's good
I
to
said,
be in
okay,
Arizona.
Welcome to Arizona. There's a niche entrepreneur.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. So let's talk for a moment about a gentleman drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And was it a slow descent or just a flop and you hit the ground?
I just hit the ground. For those that don't understand alcoholism, I follow the AA program, and I've been in their program for 7 years now, and I still go to meetings. And in the AA program, they talk about alcoholism as both a mental and a physical disease. So it affects the body, and it also affects the brain, because people don't understand how can anybody drink. Well, that's a mental issue. And the physical part is my body literally collapsed. But I was what's called a high-bottom drunk, and as a high-bottom drunk, my body could process inordinate amounts of alcohol. And, you know, I was the guy that could always drink people under the table. You know, I could always drink more than people, I could always bet, and I'd always win. But what I didn't know is I call it the magic sponge. I had a magic sponge in my body, and as a result, I could drink all this alcohol, and one day the sponge starts to leak. This is just a theory. I mean, there really is no sponge in my body. So I got this sponge, and it starts leaking. I started slurring my words. I started falling down. I started getting angry. I started cursing. I started forgetting appointments. So my downhill fall lasted about 6 weeks. I passed out of New York City. I got robbed. It was the night before Christmas. They took my coat. I threw up all over myself. I almost got hit by a taxi cab. Took to a hospital, and I could not remember my name. Now, you would think that at that bottom, I would have known that I had a drinking problem, but I really didn't because I was always a high-bottom drunk. I didn't know I had a drinking problem. So it took me about another couple of months to understand that if I took one drink, it felt like 20. So eventually I did some research, got into the program, declared my sobriety, and I've been sober 7 years.
Wow. So what happened to the people around you when you hadn't recognized yet your alcoholism? What were they
Most
doing?
Of the people missed the old Jeffrey. Jeffrey was pretty funny. Jeffrey was talented. I was an author. I wrote textbooks. I was hanging around a lot of entertainment people. And people said, we miss you. You're not funny anymore. Have a drink. And I said, no, I can't. You know, because when you drink with drinkers, they want you to drink with them. Very rarely do people drink by themselves. And then, you know, when you say, no, I'm not drinking anymore, they say, ah, come on, one drink, it can't hurt. So people missed this image, who I was, and then I basically became, I isolated for about a year, year and a half. I just didn't like the people that drank anymore, so I started isolating, and now I'm back into being around people because I can handle it. I have the confidence to be able to go at a party and say, no, I don't drink. But, yeah, people, the initial reaction was people missed me, and I missed my best friend, which was a bottle of scotch. I loved Glenlivet. That was my favorite friend.
Mm-hmm.
I literally missed it. I cried when I said goodbye.
I bet you did, because you have to embrace a totally different existence. You know, I have a theory about those people that keep trying to cajole you back into it and say, just one, because I drink very rarely, but it's a choice, and I drank a ton before I turned 21. I just I wasn't ashamed, but, like, it just wasn't fun because, like, I was allowed to be in the bars. I wasn't sneaking into them anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, when you choose not to drink, when you make the election – I think it makes other people who drink feel uncomfortable about their drinking.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, because, you know, because I don't care what other people think, usually. Plus, I'm so health conscious that, you know, I just didn't want the extra calories because I was thinking, well, God, then it's going to dehydrate me and I have to drink all this extra water. And if I just don't drink it, I don't have to run extra laps or lift more weights. I could just keep going the way I'm going. And so for me, like, I rationalized it in another way, and it made it an easy choice for me. But I think for those that feel like that, you know, that they have to drink, you know, I mean, and I've had people in the past say, you know, well, it would just be nice if you unwound and would have a drink. And I'm like, I'm not wound up. Clearly you are.
Well, that's called transference. I was in therapy for 10 years. So, yeah, people who drink tend to transfer their problems onto others. That's why it's so easy for smart people like you or me to see flaws in other people. We rarely can see them in ourselves, but we could see it in others. So when you're in a drinking crowd, think of it like a pack of wolves, and you pull out and you question the value of the pack, then people are going to question that, because then they have to question themselves, and that's frightening.
It's very frightening to look yourself in the mirror and have that meeting with me, myself, and I.
Oh, yeah, but I got through it. I had friends and supportive, and my wife is Al-Anon now. She's been in Al-Anon for 5 years, and that's a group that helps people that are dealing with others who are dealing with alcoholism, because I think in your last interview you used the, or she used the word enable, and that's true. A lot of people enable others because they really don't want to change the equilibrium of the dysfunctional family. So when one person decides to become healthy, whether it's lose weight, give up cigarettes, give up gambling, give up sex, whatever, you know, is the addiction, credit cards, you basically disrupt the equilibrium in a dysfunctional environment, and as a result, people are not going to be happy with it because you're challenging their values.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And they may not, they may resist or not like the new dynamic. And it's not that they won't, but most people fear change. Even though change is inevitable, people still fear it. And
that's true.
And that's probably why people enable, because they don't want to rock the boat.
Yeah, but if you live in the moment, you can get to that point of really living in the moment and really living the journey and knowing that you can't change yesterday. You don't, one of the phrases I love is you don't rent space in your brain for free. So whenever you start getting angry with people, you're renting space in your brain for free, because you're basically punishing others. Like, I love these people that say, I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to kill myself. No one loves me. I go, fine, I'll sit here, I'll watch you. I mean, literally, they're playing out this childlike fantasy that's basically saying is pay attention to me. And some people do kill themselves. But you eventually, when you get into that true moment, and you can't live the future, it hasn't happened, you can't relive the past because it's wasted energy, you truly get to that point of serenity that you that people strive for, and that's why I don't even think about change anymore, because I'm changing almost in nanoseconds.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Change is inevitable, but most people won't embrace it. They resist it, and they do it kicking and screaming too many times.
Yeah, but they may become our clients. They may be the people that buy services from us. Look, if that's your decision, that's what you want, to make your $40,000 or $50,000 a year and that's going to make you happy, God bless you. I can't live like that. I love the idea that I only got one life to live. I'm probably going to go back to the earth. I don't believe in heaven or hell. I don't know where I came from. I don't know where I'm going. I want to try to make the most in this journey. And as a result, it's not about me anymore. Now what I'm doing is trying to do everything so I can help others figure out what they want to do, whatever that may be.
That's great. Well, we're at the close of our time together, unfortunately. So if people want to find out more about you and buy some of your books on the litany of topics that you've written on, where can they find you on the web?
Well, if they can remember my name, Jeffrey Taylor, there's only a couple Jeffrey Taylors in the world, and I'm not the Jeffrey Taylor who started Monster. I'm not the Jeffrey Taylor who's the district attorney in Washington. I'm not Jeffrey Taylor, the basketball player. I'm Jeffrey Taylor in Arizona. So my website is booksbyjeffreytaylor.com.
Perfect. And for our regular listeners, we always have links to our show guests, so those will be up this afternoon, so you can link through our website at www.unlockyourwealth.com. So are you going to the Phoenix Film Festival?
Nah, I don't like the people that own or run that festival. I've had some run-ins with them in the past, but I think it's great for the public. I think they got some great product there, but I'm not really a welcome person, you know, at that festival.
Arizona is the antithesis of a movie-making town. They say they want the business, but then they're very, very reticent when it comes to funding this stuff and doing what they say they're going to do.
Well, we're a good training city. You know, the best chefs leave here and go to Chicago and New York and Los Angeles, and the best people in the movies, whether they're in production or acting, they go to Los Angeles or New York or Toronto, and that's the way it should be. We will never be a major city. We will have the people. We'll have the wealth. We'll never give a lot of money to children because too many people here come here to retire. So we're in a state that really is trying to really redefine itself, and there's good movies made here, but we'll never really be a movie capital.
Yeah, my friend's movie, Middlemen, is the closing film at the film festival, and I got to be an extra in the movie. So
good for you. You got to learn to sit around for 12 hours for $25 in donuts.
Yeah. Well, I'm staying away from the donuts, but...
But
anyway,
do you hang around? There's a lot of time you're off scene and offset than you are on scene, but you really learn the process. It's a very tedious process.
Yes, it is, but it's always great to see the final product, so that's what's so exciting.
Right, and if anybody ever wants me to look at their business plan or look at their script and whatever, you know, jeffreyarizona@aol.com. I never charge. I look at stuff, and if I think it's good, I'll invest in it.
Outstanding. Well, thank you so much for spending time with us today on the show.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and I hope to meet you someday because I like your picture. You look like you'd be great to meet and meet you.
Oh, you as well. We'll make a plan to get together for sure.
Well, aren't you up in Flagstaff or Prescott or something like that?
Just on the weekends I come up to our cabin here in Payson, but I'm a Phoenician for sure.
Good. Well, God bless you, and thank you so much.
Absolutely. You take care. And now for our nuts and bolts for this week on our first new season, or I should say our fifth season, but our first key for the new season, we have acceptance and affirmation. And the value in this week's key is that we have to come to terms with ourselves. And that's a tough process because if you address that you have an issue, if you decide to accept the reality of that, then that creates an obligation for you to change it if it's not working for you. And that's really difficult for people. The grieving process is a great way to illustrate that concept. And if, let's say, for example, a loved one has been told you have cancer, you have 6 months to live, whatever it might be, the first thing is they go into denial. The shock of all of it sends them right into denial. No, this isn't right. I need a second opinion. I need a third, 20th, 50th opinion. This isn't happening to me. And that starts the grieving process. And when you realize you don't know anything about money management or you've made mistakes and you're underwater, coming to terms with that is difficult. The first thing is, I'm okay. You get in denial. But you got to work through that grieving process, and the final phase of that grieving process is acceptance. And that's what we need to do when it comes to managing our money. If you are constantly spending more than you make, if you do your What's the Difference worksheet from the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation, and it's a negative number, you're in trouble. And using the What's the Difference worksheet is a great way to identify where you are, and if there's issues, it's going to show up on this worksheet. And once we come to terms with where we are, that's when we can make the move to change things. But sometimes it's difficult to incorporate change. We talked about it in our Minutes on Your Money about changing habits, because you're going to have to restructure so many different things in order to be successful at changing how you look at and manage your money. And that's where the affirmation portion of this week's key comes into play. And with the affirmation, what we're doing is we're making a conscious effort to convince that little voice inside of us, who I'm affectionately referring to as the curmudgeon, to change his tune. Because whenever you say, I want to lose weight, he's the first one to say, who are you kidding? Your family's big boned. Everybody in your family's fat. You're not going to lose weight. The same thing is going to happen when you say, I'm going to get out of debt and I want to be financially independent. It could be a millionaire. It could be a 100,000-aire. It could be 50,000, whatever your number is that you feel is your financial independence. It could just be, I don't have any credit card debt. That could be your value of financial independence. And the first thing that's going to happen is that guy inside you is going to say, yeah, who are you kidding? That's all you know how to live. So we have to actively work to change how we perceive ourselves and reinforce that we have goals that are worthy of us, of our time, because our time is priceless. Whether you believe that or not is up to you. But if you believe your time is priceless, and like Jeffrey said, I could be gone tomorrow. You never know. So what is your value today? If you are worthy of your goals, you need to convince the curmudgeon. And using our affirmation process is exactly how you're going to get there. And each week on the show, we always run through the affirmation process. So what you need to do is create some affirmations. And we have a 6 P's for affirmation process. And if you're interested in that worksheet, because we're running out of time on today's show, because our guests ran long, I'd be happy to send it to you. All you have to do is send me an email at 6P worksheet and do it 6SIX, the letter P, and then WKS at unlockyourwealth.com. Or subscribe to the eZine at eZine, E-Z-I-N-E, at unlockyourwealth.com. I will send you the 6 P's for affirmation success. It's also in the new book I have coming out, Yes, You Can. We work through that process in my chapter that I co-authored with Dr. Warren Bennis and the late Jim Rohn, the business philosopher. So for this week's Nuts and Bolts, our key statement is, I realize that in order to change my financial position in life, I must accept my current fate. I must accept my current fate. So that's our key statement. Our key affirmation is, I am financially independent. I am financially independent. And we're going to say that at the end of the day. The very first time we use our affirmation is at the end of the day, right before we go to bed, we're going to pull out our affirmation worksheet, and we're going to have a litany of them, but this is your first. And what we're going to do is read them all out loud to ourselves, because now we're taking and we're talking to our subconscious mind, who's going to take that information and process it all throughout the night while we're getting restful and restorative sleep, and it's going to create new neural pathways, so when we wake up in the morning, rested and refreshed, we're going to have a better handle on how we're going to tackle this, because the brain is amazing. It's the best superhuman computer of the universe ever on the planet, and what you tell it to do, it will do. It just knows how to do things, and it doesn't hear the word no. So you have to make sure that your affirmations are positive, and you are already doing them. So I am financially independent sets you up for that future financial independence to occur today. Then we're going to say our affirmations first thing in the morning. Don't roll over and kiss the spouse or let the dog out. Nope, pull out your affirmation worksheet and go through them again out loud to yourself. And then what you can do, because you say this, does now focus your conscious mind on your higher purpose for the day. Because your general purpose is going to be shuffle the kids back and forth to school, get dry cleaning, go to your own job, take the kids to all of their after-school activities, make dinner, whatever it is, do your charity work. There's a litany of things that are general purpose for the day, but your higher purpose is to create these things for yourself and bring them into fruition, and one of which is to become financially independent, because with financial independence, you become free to choose what you want in your lifetime. And then anytime we go through the day and encounter negativity, whether it's from a coworker, a boss, a subordinate, a spouse, a child, a teacher, your children's teacher, whatever occurs in your life where you're getting negativity from somebody and they're casting aspersions your direction because they're trying to get rid of it, after you're away from that negative situation, you need to push that negativity off, because what we think about, we bring about. And what you're going to do then is you are going to say your affirmations, run off to the corner or find a bathroom or somewhere that you can get away and reread your affirmations to focus on what your higher purpose is. Do not let others derail you from your dreams. Stay on task so what you think about, you bring about. And this week's key action item for you is to sit back and take a personal inventory mentally of what you have going on. And we'll also send you the What's the Difference worksheet, too, if you send us an email at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation or sign up for the e-zine at our show page at unlockyourwealth.com. Just type in the box that you want the worksheet for this week, and I'll send you the What's the Difference worksheet. And you work through that What's the Difference. And you will say to yourself when you're done, whatever that number is, it's going to jar you if you've never done these before. And you're going to say, okay, I need to change, and I need to come to terms with my financial life. And in that moment, once you accept your financial fate, then you have the power to change it. And that's what we're going to focus on, is how do we do that? And step by step, each week, for the next 12 weeks after today, we're going to learn how to become financially independent with the Keys to Riches. Because the Keys to Riches financial freedom series is a baker's dozen of financial concepts that not only teach you how to think like the rich and be in control of your own money, but it also gives you specific techniques to create or fix your credit, reduce debt, save and invest, building wealth through real estate, all while transforming your current financial habits into healthy money management skills. Thank you so much for joining us. Remember, it's National Financial Literacy Month, so go out and learn how to manage your money or teach someone else the value of a dollar. And I thank you so much for listening. Remember to tune in on Tuesdays at 6:30 for Millionaire Nuts and Bolts from the Unlock Your Wealth radio program. Start your day the millionaire way, and then we'll see you again at the midweek update on Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. for 30 minutes to give you a shot in the arm until we revisit next Saturday with our next key coming up, which is Take Action, Make Assessment. I want to thank both my guests, Jeffrey Taylor and Sharon Lechter, for joining us. It's been a pleasure chatting with you, and I look forward to seeing you next week. Thanks so much for joining us. You have been listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. Thanks so much for joining us, and here is to your financial independence.
I've had it up to here, listening to a small segment of people trying to put down America. America's the greatest land on earth, and we ought to be proud of what we have. I'm proud of America. I'm proud of our people, and I'm going to prove it. We're American and damn proud of it.
Frankly, I'm getting a little ticked off.
Go to hell.